Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end-of-season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers and more. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
The new Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, is now speaking.
Forums dominated by the inflated rhetoric of demonstrations rather than a place where different groups can argue in good faith and respectfully disagree. On the day where we carry out our most important constitutional duty as representatives of the people, we should take a moment to remember and respect those things which we share. It is a profound honour to be nominated to serve as head of the government in a free, democratic and diverse republic. Today, I am deeply conscious of the democratic tradition which our country has developed over more than a century. We should never take for granted the freedoms and opportunities secured for us by the generations who sat here before us and by the men and women who fought and campaigned for the establishment of Dáil Éireann. Our democracy has remained strong through some of the gravest challenges of a turbulent century. We have continued to have free debate and free elections. We have never wavered in our commitment to the peaceful resolution of disputes. The most powerful thing about the mandate which each of us in this House holds is that it is based on the support of our families, our supporters, in most cases our parties, and above all, our communities. I could not be more thankful to all of those who have been at my side and have helped me to achieve the honour of being nominated to serve as Taoiseach. It is the nature of politics that the focus is mostly on the few of us who achieve office. But the role of those who work with and for us is central. And I want to thank those who work for our party and have kept our voice and our representation so strong. They never believed the predictions and had faith that our people and our policies would prevail. I also want to thank the many friends and colleagues who have helped me over the years and who, with typical Cork modesty, advocate on a regular basis for the well-being of my home city and county. As they have grown, my children Micheál A, Ava and Killian have moved from being observers to being pillars for me. They are unflinching in their advice and constant in their support. I have been blessed to have a partner in Mary who has done so much more than just keeping me rooted. No position I have held and nothing I have achieved would have been possible without her. I would also like to acknowledge my wider family and especially my late parents, Paddy and Lana. Yesterday was the anniversary of the passing of my late father. And this week, every year, I remember all he did for us and the values which he lived by every day. A strong and athletic sporting man, he was also quiet and determined in the small and large steps he took every day to help others. The CIE Widow and Orphans Fund, which he founded, helping hundreds of families at tough times of the year, was just one example of his commitment to turning values into action. Ours was a home where service to the wider community and an understanding of shared responsibility within society was always the defining value. Turner's Cross was a wonderful place to grow up in, and I will always be grateful to Cláiste de Chrís III, both primary and secondary, for the education and encouragement which our teachers gave to me and my generation. My respect and belief in the essential role teachers play in building communities and society stems from the inspiring guidance I received from many of my teachers who were ambitious for us and set the sky as the limit. And it was also there that I first learned of the power of political action, as few of us working class kids then could have hoped to complete school without the revolution which Minister for Education Donal O'Malley and former Taoiseach Jack Lynch introduced. As I As I look at Ireland today, it is clear that there can be a degree of cynicism towards politics, and too often we dismiss the motivation of others, especially those we disagree with. I reject this. I believe in the good faith of those who seek to serve their communities in elective office. And I believe that politics remains a force for good, a force for positive change. I hope that we can have a cooperative Oireachtas in the coming years, where we try to emphasise positive discussion. For my part, I intend to remain open to constructive ideas from deputies from all parts of the House. When nominating members of the new government, I will address more specific policy points, but I think it's important to state the core principles on which I intend to lead the government. When reflecting on the legacy of republicanism from the 1916 generation of which he was a part, Sean Lamass always stressed the idea of responding to the needs of today and shaping the future. For him, true republicanism was not about following the past. It was about a willingness to move on and create new ways forward. He summed this up with his favourite quote from Padraig Pearse: "Every generation has its task." And for us today, for this generation of political leaders, the task is to protect Ireland's strength at a moment of real threat, while also addressing critical social needs. By any reasonable measure, this is a challenging moment in world history. Ireland is an open democracy with an open economy. We cannot expect to stand unaffected on the sidelines. We must protect and renew an economic model which delivers high employment and resources for public services. Central to this, we must strengthen our three essential relationships with Europe, with the United States, and with the United Kingdom. Europe is the essential foundation upon which we rely. And this week marks the anniversary of the day when Jack Lynch and Patrick Hillary signalled our commitment to a European future by signing our Treaty of Accession. The government I lead will work every day in the same spirit. We will work to help reform and strengthen the European Union. We will work with others to overcome urgent economic, environmental and political challenges which threaten our shared interests and values. We will not flinch in our support for protecting Europe's freedom and democracy. Our relationship of kinship with the United States is older than our state. It has endured because we have continued to renew bonds of respect and cooperation. We are not naive about the realities of change, but equally, the Ireland-America relationship is one which benefits us both, and it will emerge strongly no matter what. The United Kingdom remains a close social, cultural and economic neighbour for us, and we will begin operating a new systematic approach to consultation and cooperation. And internationally, we'll be an active voice for the values of peace, cooperation and development. We will follow the profoundly welcome ceasefire in Gaza with a sustained programme of humanitarian and reconstruction aid. And we will do this through cooperation with the World Food Programme and UNRWA. Protecting and renewing Ireland's economic strength and standing in the world must, as I have said, also be accompanied by sustained action on other urgent needs. 60 years ago, this month, Sean Lamass went to Stormont to meet Terence O'Neill. They agreed that we should be able to promote our constitutional objectives while also working together for shared development. It is a great tragedy that their new departure then was not allowed to achieve more. The new government will push forward on the historic task of building a lasting reconciliation. We will implement the largest ever programme of North-South research and investment, opening critical links and building both engagement and understanding through a further strengthened Shared Island initiative. Too many people are struggling to afford a home to buy or rent. Helping them will be a priority for the new government and for the Dáil. Too many people with disabilities and their families have to fight too hard to access the services they deserve. We must begin a new era in support for them, not just increasing resources, but step changing the scale, nature and delivery of services. And this is not the work of one minister, It must be the work of every part of government and of this Oireachtas. We must deliver both resources and reform to help all our children to get the best start in life through smaller classes, through community development programmes and through targeting resources to help families experiencing poverty. We must protect nature and biodiversity and move forward in tackling the existential problem of climate change. In all of this, the government I will lead will reject the sterile politics of the extremes, the empty gestures of those who want to impose inflexible ideologies when addressing issues which are as complex and diverse as our people. Mine will be a government which seeks to work in a spirit of practical republicanism, a spirit which has helped our country achieve so much in the past and which is essential if we are to meet the challenges of today. A spirit which will create equality of opportunity for all, which will work to underpin and promote the status, the dignity and independence of people with disabilities. A spirit that will build more houses at an accelerated pace and work every day to build reconciliation between the different traditions on the island of Ireland. In my role, Mar Taoiseach, Ar an Rialtas Nua Seo, Ag Treibhse Coradhach Míchoineach Timpeall na Cruinne, Tá Aon Láidir Agam, Obair Leanúnach Gan Stad a Dhéanamh Gach Éin Lá, Mar Taoiseach, Chun an Tír Seo a Chur Chun Cinn. Buntáistí agus Luachanna na hÉireann a léirú thar lár, agus gan amhras, beidh an Rialtas ag dul an nGlic leis na dúchláin Mhóra Timpeall Oireann Inniu. Gheolaim díobh, go mbeidh mé ag freastal ar mo dhíthil ar son na tíre seo. Go raibh míle míle maith agaibh, agus ní neart go cur le chéile.
There's a new Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, the 17th holder of that office. Though, as you know, this is the second time, but is the 17th Taoiseach since the foundation of this great state. A number of people have held the office for more than once. Charlie Haughey didn't held it for on three different occasions. Gareth Fitzgerald, Jack Lynch, I think the Cork man as well, held it twice. Eamon de Valera going way back. I think had three, if not four different occasions, and he succeeded the first person who we regard as Taoiseach, even though the title was President of the Executive Council, William T. Cosgrave, and that was in December 1922. The Taoiseach now leaves the chamber. He goes out, as you know, into the front of the Dáil, and anyone who's been down there, as I have this morning, Muldrow Street is closed, Kildare Street is closed, Merrion Square is mostly closed, believe it or not. And the I'd say he will leave for Áras an Uachtaráin around 2:15, so he will go down Nassau Street. Go down Kildare Street, turn right onto Nassau Street, down Westland Row. He'd be allowed to use the bus lane. And up Pierce Street, be gridlocked as usual, be allowed a two bus lane, onto Tara Street, onto the Quays, and I presume he will be allowed cross O'Connor Bridge directly. There's a no cross directly at the moment, but given that he'll have a Garda escort and his job is to get to the Áras, and he should be in the Áras, I'd say, within 12 minutes of leaving Dáil Éireann, and then he will have a short meeting with Uachtaráin na hÉireann, and he will be presented with a seal of office, and then there will be another private meeting, photographs obviously, and then he will head back to he's still in the chamber there being congratulated left, right and centre by everyone in good nature. The atmosphere, it seems, has prevailed after the last 24 hours, but so be it. The Oscar nominations will be out soon for Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor, Best Director, and that's just for the last 24 hours in the Dáil. But anyway, Micheál Martin, it's a fantastic day for him. 64 years of age, father of three children, as you know, married to Mary. Mary met Mary through Fianna Fáil many, many years ago. His three adult children, Micheál A, Eva and Killian, were there. And as you know, and he mentions them often, they had two children, Mary and Micheál, who died quite young. Rory was, I think, 6 weeks old when he passed into the year 2000. And Liana, called after, obviously, Micheál's mother, who I knew Liana. She died when she was 8 years of age. So they have seen their ups and downs and the travails of life as well. But it's a fantastic day for him, fantastic day for his family. He mentioned his parents. Paddy was a boxer. Paddy worked in CIE, as it was then, on the buses in Cork City. And Liana was a great, great, strong woman. And he mentioned her again. So that's Micheál Martin is the 17th holder of the office. It's his second time. But remember, you remember that Saturday? It sounds like 50 years ago, 10 years ago even. It was June the 20th, 2020. It was a Saturday. And it was in the convention centre. And it was very, very low key because we were in the middle of a pandemic. And Micheál's family were not allowed to travel from Cork. It wasn't regarded as necessary and would have been breaking the rules at the time. And it was very low key. But there is, he's leaving the chamber now and he's on camera. The chamber is now empty and we'll reconvene this evening when Micheál Martin would lead in his new cabinet. Depends, I don't know how many super juniors he's going to announce today or indeed junior ministers. But that's happening. Tom Carew, Tom, good afternoon. You're a seasoned. What did you think of our new Taoiseach's speech?
I was surprised nobody made any mention of one amazing fact.
Get my hair washed.
Hang on, there's someone else on the line. Go ahead.
One thing I was amazed nobody actually mentioned. As Health Minister, he brought in the smoking ban, which seemed to me at the time to be daft that nobody would observe it. And the experts now estimate that well over 7,000 lives have been saved since that came in.
Okay.
And that was an act of amazing courage politically, because I was convinced that it was a disaster and that not one pub would observe it, but it was observed instantly and totally across the country.
Very
and
lovely.
Over 7,000 lives saved, that's something which is to the credit of anybody in politics. But I must say that offsetting that, yesterday was an unbelievable day. It wasn't only unprecedented, there was something far worse going on. It was needless because if you want to make a change in anybody, any committee, any movement of any kind, in the Dáil, the same thing. You want to change a rule, you propose a change. You want to abolish it, you propose it and go through the proper procedures. That's been done today with the Reform Committee handling it. So it was needless, but it was worse than that. It was worse than that.
Yeah, but Tom, in fairness, things move quickly. And that was yesterday. Today is today. I'm not trying to cut across you, but today is today. The row was the row. You can make it. No one died, thank God. The row was the row yesterday. Yeah. You can.
The international damage to our
international? Well, every parliament. Have you seen South Korea lately? Every parliament
We do things in this country. We do things in this country in a decent, organised way. And this was the reverse. But it was more than just not needless. It was actually sinister because the town caller was shouted down by a baying mob who attempted to hijack today. The business was to elect the Taoiseach. That should have been done yesterday.
Okay.
And there was no need whatever and no justification.
But
really
have they not put all that behind them now? Leonora Carney, stay there, Tom. Leonora, what did you think? What did you think of our new Taoiseach's speech?
Very good. I was delighted that he thanked his family, his backroom people. He spoke about disabilities. He spoke about democracy. Because basically, when your researchers phoned me yesterday, it was to see was I hopeful about the government. I'm very hopeful about the government. But having watched the shenanigans in the Dáil yesterday was akin to the storming of the Capitol in Washington. I just think it was horrific.
Now. We get a grip, Leonora. It was no more. Like, don't make that comparison. People died on January
it's
the 6th.
Joe.
He spoke about practical republicanism. Let's go to Barry Lennon. Barry, has the Taoiseach arrived, the new Taoiseach, has he arrived at the front of Leinster House? Which way is he heading?
Yes, Joe, you can hear me there, can you? We're just here at the entrance to Leinster House. The Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party has formed a guard of honour, so the chamber's empty. He's about to leave any second now. All the Fianna Fáil TDs, senators, some party supporters as well, they've formed a guard of honour here. Some of them will be learning their fate in terms of cabinet ministries over the next short while as well. So a few anxious faces. I spot one or two first-time Fine Gael TDs who've happened to fall fall into the Fianna Fáil Guard of Honour as well. Maybe they're not sure which party they're supposed to be supporting, Joe Cooney and Pete Roach there. Okay. But all the ministers, Jack Chambers, as you can hear now, a bit of a cheer coming. We think Micheál Martin, of course, the second ever Cork Taoiseach. And after today, he's also the second longest reigning Fianna Fáil leader. As we speak, his wife, Mary, has come out through the entrance of Leinster House, and his family emerging as well with a round of applause for Mary, as you alluded to there a few moments ago, Joe. The family on a personal level have had their fair share of tragedy over the years, having lost two children, one at 7 years of age and one in as well. So Mary kissing and shaking hands with the Fianna Fáil TDs, senators and outgoing ministers. Of course, she was here yesterday. The family had to go home not expecting it. And as Micheál alluded to, yesterday was the anniversary of his late father, who, as he said, set up the CIE Orphans and Widow Fund as well, a famous amateur boxer. So Mary, his wife, has come out, his children coming out as well. So we're expecting the Taoiseach any moment now, the new Taoiseach, for a second time, Micheál Martin, to emerge any second now to make his way to Áras and Uachtaráin.
And so the previous longest, as you say, incumbent was Bertie Ahern as Fianna Fáil holder of the office of Taoiseach. But Micheál Martin will have at least another two and a half years to begin with, till what, November 26, 27. There's a lot going to happen in the meantime in terms of international...
That's it, and he alluded to in terms of the threats that face the country, particularly economically as well. I see his brother, the long-serving councillor, Sean Martin, emerging as well. And Micheál A. Martin, might he have missed Cork senior football training last night, or tonight rather, due to the hoopla that emerged as well. Mead supporters will be keen to hear if he did miss training, I'm told. Also there, the Fianna Fáil General Secretary Sean Dorgan, who was Micheál Martin's right-hand man in what they termed an electoral success, with a 9-seat gap over the nearest competitors, Sinn Féin, and a 10-seat gap over their once great rivals, Fine Gael. But a sense of hush now emerging over the TDs and senators. Micheál Martin has long left the chamber. He's probably waiting for that perfect moment, that perfect photograph moment to emerge from the frontier. And that ring of steel around the area will make things a little easier for him to make it across to Áras and Uachtaráin, where he'll have a private meeting with Michael D. Higgins first.
But Barry, is that unprecedented, this new, every time the Dáil sits, the half of the city has to shut down now? What's
it
all that about?
The incident in September of last year, in which the future Minister of State, Independent Kerry TD, Michael Healy-Ray, was jostled. Of course, you'll remember people came with paraphernalia showing nooses for politicians.
Does that mean Kildare Street, Molesworth Street, Merrion Square, it's all shut down now every time the Dáil sits?
Yeah, so the Gardaí had been criticised for their response to that, but perhaps the answer to criticism is maybe to go one step further. Now, some TDs today, to me, have expressed displeasure at the arrangements, and the traffic around the city at rush hour this morning was chaotic. A lot of rubber on the roads, as one of my relations used to say, really bumper to bumper. So it is something perhaps that will come under review, you would think, especially with government TDs saying it as well, that perhaps it is something too much, in particular the closures around Merrion Street outside government buildings. We did a protest here yesterday to enact the Occupied Territories Bill, which went off peacefully, and Manny saying, and here we go now, Micheál Martin just has exited the front of Leinster House and is congratulated by the TDs. He's shaking their hands, the Guard of Honour there for him, as you can hear in the background, all clapping, wishing him well. He's giving a kiss there to Mary Butler, who's tipped to be the next Minister perhaps of Children and Disabilities, and be at Cabinet, the Waterford TD. And Micheál Martin making his way through there with two ushers beside him, Joe, who are guarding and making his way through this Guard of Honour, through the long list of TD senators and supporters. And right at the bottom of the Guard of Honour, in a green dress, a black cardigan, is his wife Mary, standing beside the Clare TD, Timmy Dooley, who of course is one of Micheál Martin's great friends. And as you can hear there, cheers for the 17th Taoiseach as he walks through his Guard of Honour on his way to the adjoining car, which will bring him straight over to Áras and Uachtaráin in 12 minutes, as you think, Joe.
And I see him
whiz through the bus lanes.
I see the new Taoiseach giving a very warm handshake to Albert Dolan.
That's 26-year-old from Monavea. And of course, Albert Dolan's uncle, Michael F. Dolan, was an unsuccessful candidate for Fianna Fáil in 2011 in Micheál Martin's first election. And many people after that said Micheál Martin will become the first Fianna Fáil leader in Irish history to never become Taoiseach. There's been often murmurings around his leadership, yeah. but he is here today, Taoiseach for a second time, and he's outlasted all the critics who said he would never make it to this point. And of course today, as you said, it feels like a lifetime ago, in June 2020 when he became Taoiseach originally, he had none of this. He had to stand socially distant from all his colleagues, all his supporters. A big hug there, I think, for one of his long-time supporters as well.
There's no social distancing. The kissing is incredible, and that's just the men, Barry.
That's just the
he's kissing everybody. There's a kiss for everyone in the audience.
I wonder, was there a kiss for Charles Haughey back in the day, Joe? How times have changed in Leinster House and in Fianna Fáil. And now he makes his way across to his wife, Mary, and gives her a big kiss on the lips and a huge cheer with Timmy Dooley, Senator Ned O'Sullivan, one of his great friends, Brendan Smith around them as well. And they're stopping for a photograph and for that picture, which they felt they should have had in 2020, denied it due to the COVID pandemic, as the photographers now call him, and he comes right over with his wife Mary to the photographers here for this special
and
moment.
You mentioned
them,
earlier, Barry, that Mary was wearing a green dress, but she has a beautiful blue neck scarf on her. So maybe that's a sign of the new times.
Coalition. Yes, the new Micheál paradigms Martin of Irish politics.
Micheál Martin is wearing his normal blue shirt and wine tie, a bit like Donald Trump the other day. He didn't wear a red tie, he wore a wine-colored tie, and then his suit. But again, luckily enough, Micheál hasn't got a pick on him, so he can carry his suit.
That's it. Well, he eats a slab of dark chocolate every day. Here he is. he's saying hello here to Donal from the Evening Echo, so looking after the local press.
Of course, yeah.
Taoiseach tried to get a word there. He's off quickly to Áras an Uachtaráin because time is of the essence here in relation to the storm, the red alert. They need to get all the business. He's saying that the local press and the Evening Echo put everything together, so there'll be great celebrations in Cork tonight, one would expect, around Nemo Rangers GAA Club. Of course, not a good day for Cork in Croke Park on Sunday with Sarsfields, but they have their moment in the sun here today. And Micheál Martin, more well wishing there as he's been trying to be shoved over towards the car to get the show on the road. As I said, there's a bit of pressure here on to get things done and dusted by 6:30 or 7:30 in order to facilitate TDs and staff to make their way home before the red warning comes into play. Okay. And also around him there I see Tony Fitzgerald, his great friend and councillor from Knocknaheeny in North Cork as well. So a special moment for Micheál Martin and his supporters, as you can hear the cheers, really perhaps greater than the more recent moments we've had like this for Leo Varadkar and Simon Harris. But again, perhaps Mr. Martin around for quite a long time, since 1989 first elected, and as I say today fulfilling that moment that perhaps was denied to him by these stringent COVID restrictions of 2020, and his handling of those, of course, referenced by Albert Dolan when nominating him for this job once again. And now the car off on its way, Joe, to Áras an Uachtaráin. Michael D. Higgins, he had to wait yesterday, a bit like somebody waiting for the electrician or plumber to call and they never turn up, that awful feeling. But Michael D. Higgins now on his, will be ready and waiting for Micheál Martin to come and officially receive for a second time his seal of office to become, as you say, Taoiseach once again.
And the Garda Outriders are waiting there at the gate. There's a when you become Taoiseach, you get a second car in your security detail, obviously enough, and that will be with him now on. And Micheál Martin, when I interviewed him for The Meaning of Life, which was about when he was Taoiseach the last time, and he pointed out that one of the things he wasn't mad about when he was Taoiseach was the fact that he lives in a small community in Cork, and he wasn't mad about the extra security. So, but they did, with the help of the neighbours, they did make it as unobtrusive as possible. But that has to happen again, especially in the world we live in. So the cavalcade is now off to Áras an Uachtaráin with our new Taoiseach, and he will be back in the Dáil Chamber. Thanks, Barry, by the way. You're great. Barry Lenihan last night, I listened to him on with Colm, a very feisty programme with Catherine Connolly, the TD, previous Lascaun Carla, saying at one stage, by the way, nothing to do with the content of the programme because it was great, saying at one stage she was bored and can I continue doodling? Now, I would love to see the doodles, but anyway, it was a very lively programme. But thanks, Barry. Barry will be reporting. Slán. Barry will be reporting all afternoon. And as you could hear there, he has seed, breed and generation of every politician's friend in the country. OK, new Taoiseach. Just been elected, formal seal of office is now 2:15, formal seal of office I'd say around 2:35, 2:40 in Arsenault Tehran, and then back into the campus of the Oireachtas, I presume around 3:30, and then the phone calls start, or maybe they even start when he's in the car. The phone calls start and people will be waiting. And remember, when he appointed Norma Foley, who was there, embracing the new Taoiseach, when he appointed Norma Foley the last time as Minister for Education, she wasn't expecting it. She was in Arnott's, in Henry Street at the time, and she got the phone call to say, will you come up to the Taoiseach's office? He wants to talk to you. And obviously there was a job, and she hightailed it back across the Liffey. Okay, Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715
815. And Joe at rt.ie, the passing of Paddy Cole, the legendary Paddy Cole, at 85 years of age yesterday afternoon. Paddy has been on the stage since he was 12 years of age. He was a brilliant saxophonist, a brilliant entertainer, and a brilliant talker, and a brilliant friend to so many. And his passing is a very sad occasion for many, many people, including Eamon Monaghan. Eamon, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Very sad day.
Very sad day.
When did you first play with Paddy in the band?
I'm the last of the capital.
Ah.
The last out of nine of us. The last man standing.
Ah,
We started as a student band at the Capitol in 1959 and 60, and a promoter called Tom Doherty got an idea that we might go professional, that we were might be good enough if we could augment the band with a few really top musicians, and Paddy Cole came to mind immediately. And I remember the first time I went to hear him, he was playing at Barry's Hotel, and he opened my eyes.
And he was he's been around for so long, and such a great, he's a great, he was a brilliant human being in terms of, he was one of the good guys.
He and I, we did so many different gigs. I used to do the concert hall with him when he'd have a show in the concert hall. And he was also, he had a wonderful sense of humour.
Yeah. And the last time I met Paddy, which was about 8 months ago with Noel V. Guinness, we went for coffee one morning.
Yeah, Noel V. and Evil, great pals.
And I every time I met Paddy, I said, Paddy, tell me the Roy Rogers story again.
Yeah,
the cowboy. It's so funny. Can you recall it? Roy Rogers, legendary cowboy that we all grew up with.
The legendary cowboy. Paddy, the cattle had finished, and Paddy went to Las Vegas with Brendan Boyer.
Yeah.
And Helen, they had just got married. Well, they were married some
Helen,
years.
Paddy's wife.
The editor of the Sunday World was
Kevin Maron, the great Kevin Maron, God rest him.
Kevin Maron came out to do an article on the boys playing in the Stardust.
Okay.
And he was staying with Paddy.
Yeah.
But what had happened was, Paddy was doing, they were doing a show in the Stardust.
Okay.
And this little man came up at the end, and he was all over Paddy, loved the band, and he introduced himself as Roy Rogers.
Right, yes.
And Paddy couldn't believe it, and it was Roy Rogers.
Yeah.
So Paddy, Roy Rogers invited him out to his, he had a ranch somewhere outside, mm-hmm. outside Vegas, and he had his horse, which name was Trigger.
That's right, yeah.
He had the horse stuffed in the hallway. And his wife, Dale Evans, who was a famous, she was up in bed, and they came down, and they had several libations anyway. And Paddy went back home, and that was all right, Helen. He didn't get back till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and that was all right. But two nights later, Roy Rogers is in again. And yeah. then, and again, and Roy Rogers was looking for a drinking partner. Paddy had been telling him about watching him in the Fourpennies in Castleblaney, himself and Trigger, you see, and Roy Rogers was amazed at this. But Kel Aaron had arrived in Las Vegas, and he was staying with Paddy. And at this stage, the Roy Rogers connection was wearing a bit thin with both Paddy and Helen. And the phone went, and Helen picked it up, and Paddy said to her, Helen, if that's Roy Rogers, tell him I'm not home.
Brilliant.
And of course, Kevin Martin thought Paddy was laid on. Yeah.
Because for younger listeners, Eamon, who don't know Roy Rogers and how big a star he was, a Hollywood star.
Oh,
he'd be the Tom Cruise of his day.
He and Gene Autry.
That's right.
If that's
Roy Rogers, tell him I'm not in. And Kevin went on. Stay with us, Eamon. Jim Williamson. Jim, you knew Paddy as a musician as well.
Hi, Joe. Yeah, I didn't know him very well, but I met him originally in June 91. Myself and a friend of mine, Ray O'Callaghan, were playing music at the jazz festival in Portlaoise.
Great jazz musician.
Yeah, we were playing support to him in the Collection Hotel, so his band were coming on after us. And after the gig, we were sitting in the lobby, a few of us, having a chat, and we were staying in the hotel. And this elderly man came in from outside, just wandered in, and he was a bit scruffy looking. He looked to me, for all the world, as a homeless man. And he realised, obviously, we were musicians, and he took this old banjo out of a case, and he played the most beautiful tunes and sang some lovely songs of old, and we were just taken back by what he was doing. And the manager approached us, and he said, look, lad, I kind of have to clear the lobby area here, but he said, I'll give you a room upstairs with a little bar. He said, if you want to go up and continue the session up there. And the old man turned to the manager and said, look, I've no place to stay. So the manager very kindly said, don't worry, he said, we look after you. We won't let you go out. So we all went up to the room, and I remember the person sitting next to me at the time was Aidan Stanley, an RTÉ presenter,
producer.
And we were sitting in the room, and in walked Paddy Cole. And as he came into the room, he looked at the old gentleman with the banjo, and he walked over to him, and the two men embraced, and they chatted for a while. So obviously they were old friends, they knew each other. So Paddy left to go, and I said, okay, he's gone away to his room. And he came back 5 minutes later with a clarinet and with his own banjo up there. And they both played music with this man, and it was just a very, very lovely, touching moment for somebody who loved people and loved music, you know, and just loved being in the company of others.
And that was the great Paddy Cole. Jim, is Noel V. Ginnity, you with me, Noel? Noel, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe Duffy. How are you?
How are you? Well, you were the one who rang me yesterday afternoon to tell me the sad news before it went public. What age were you when you first met Paddy Cole? What age was he? Don't give your own age away, Noel, for tax reasons. What age was Paddy Cole when you met him?
I'd say he was in his early 20s.
Wow.
And I saw him first in the Kingsway Ballroom in Granby Row in Dublin, where he was playing with the Morris Lynch Band. And he was a handsome dude of about 6 foot.
Yes.
And all the young ones down from Cabra, Googling him and Googling him. And there was I, 5 foot, nothing like, I had no chance.
And he was playing the sax then, was he? He was playing the sax.
Listen, Paddy Cole, he had a charmed life. He was a great guy. He married a great woman, Helen.
Helen, yeah.
He had a great family who I never met, but I knew them through Paddy.
Yeah.
And he was a fantastic musician. Really, a really great guy. If you wanted news, Paddy would always give you the best advice.
Yeah.
It mightn't be what you wanted, but it was very good.
And up to recently, I know you used to meet at least once a week.
Myself and Georgie Hunter, his other mate, we met every day once a week in the People's Park or down in Gleason's in Booterstown. And we met him last week. Yeah.
Oh, God. And how was he? How was he? How was his spirits?
Well, he was. Listen, Paddy Cole was always in good form.
Yeah, yeah.
But he never. I can't believe it. But he was short of breath. That's and George was worried about him driving. You know.
Yeah.
And I had some good stories about him. Jim Bulger, the horse trainer. Now, Paddy didn't gamble or didn't play horses, but Bulger was in a graveyard in Paris, and he was standing in front of Adolf Sax's headstone,
okay.
The man who invented the first saxophone.
Okay.
And he told Paddy, and Paddy told me 54,000 times, because he was delighted with that story, you know. And that when I'd go to the races, Mr. Bulger would always ask me, how is Paddy Cole? You know,
yeah,
he had a great interest in his health. And then people would see me talking to the horse trainer and say, what did Bulger say to you? I says, he says, how is Paddy Cole? You know, so, oh, stop. But he told me many stories. He told me about a fella that used to drink in the pub when he had the pub up in Castle Blaney.
Yeah.
And when the first Pope came, this fella
79,
went
yeah,
up
Pope John
the
Paul.
Pope.
Yeah, yes, yes.
He was in on the Monday night, and the boy says, where were you? We didn't see you the weekend. He says, I went up to see the Pope. He said, yeah. Did you see him? See him? He says, I was above beside him, he says.
Great.
He says, were you near him? He says, I was beside him. Your man says, could you touch him? He says, I could, but you're a man like that, wouldn't have any small change on him.
Ah, brilliant. Brilliant. Stay there, no, like Julian, no, that's not V. Kennedy. Julian Vignoles, formerly of this parish. It was latterly you became very close to Paddy,
yeah,
wasn't it, Julian?
In the last 2 years, you know, we used to drink coffee and we're both from Ranelagh, Dublin, and a little cafe called Mima. And I'd always look forward to getting you to be coffee, ? And it'd be Paddy.
Yeah.
And once or twice a week in the last 2 years. And it was, you know, I would drop anything I was doing to make sure I made it.
Your line is gone on me, Julian, unfortunately.
He was marvellous company.
Yeah. But what age was it when he started playing the saxophone, Julian?
He told a marvellous story about it. I think he was 10 or 12. And it would have been a plastic sax. And he told me this story, I don't think it's in his book, where, you know, he'd come in from school and his father would get out the music stand and the notes and said, now play that. And Paddy said he'd hear the lads outside playing football and he said he'd start crying and he couldn't see the music with the tears.
Okay.
But he said it wasn't long after that. There was no tears and he couldn't hear the football and he was totally into the music.
And I remember
I think that was his great love was music and musicians.
Yeah,
and he loved anecdotes about musicians.
Yeah.
He'd tell endless stories about and you've had some of them already. No, he was it's lovely to have a connection with somebody and I felt I had a great connection with him, and I would have known him vaguely over the previous years, but it was just lovely to get his mischievous view on the world and his positivity. Positivity is a great thing.
And I remember you telling me, Julian, that you'd met Paddy that day and his lung, obviously the power of his lungs were beginning to go, and he was really upset at the fact that he couldn't play the sax anymore.
He really was. I mean, several times we'd be sitting in this Mima cafe, somebody'd come say, Paddy, are you playing at all? And you could see the hurt in his face. Those days are over, he'd say, you know, and that was, yeah. But he'd accepted it, and he was, I don't think I've ever met a person who was as non-bitter about things. And I mean, he'd been through things, he'd been through all kinds of comings and goings in his life. But he had a chilled view of the world that was enviable.
Yeah. God rest him. And again, kind condolences and sympathy to Helen, Pat Pierce and Karen. And his many, many, many friends. I know Gay Bourne was so fond of Paddy Cole. Well, he loved showbiz people anyway. He loved showbiz people. And Paddy was showbiz to his... to his beautiful fingers and his powerful lungs, he was showbiz till the end. And as we say, Paddy passed yesterday. Noel V. Ginnity, how are you? Are you still playing the saxophone, Noel?
I gave it up, but I got a new knee, so I might be able to play with that. I have a very bad cold on me. But it's just to say about Paddy Cole, it hasn't been mentioned. He was a charitable man.
Yes,
looked after a lot of people.
Yeah.
He was a decent guy,
I'm saying it, I know how charitable you are, but I know what a good pal you were to and Eamon and Jim and Julian and Georgie
and George
and
George
all the boys to and Sil Fox, all the gang were very close.
He loved us all. Oh, he was great.
Anyway,
I'm sorry for Helen, she'll miss him most of all. That's all I can say. All right,
okay. No, so you have a new knee.
Is
there any of the original Noel V. Ginnity still in existence?
Not much.
You're like Tigger's sweeping brush in Only Fools and Horses. He's had it for 84 years. Now we change the handle.
I'll get stuffed. You know?
You're great. Yeah. Are you still up on the bike?
No, sir. I have a new knee, man. I can barely walk.
Anyway, keep going. You're great, and there's a great community, and we've lost Dickie there now in the last few months. But even at Dickie's funeral, the community of showbiz people in Ireland is one of the warmest and supportive of each other communities. It's just great to see it. Good to meet a Mahogut, and we'll hear some Paddy's great music now. Paddy Cole, God rest you, Paddy.
Joe on 0818 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. The first thing on Micheál Martin's new Taoiseach's agenda, the Dáil is reconvening at 5 o'clock. But the first thing on his agenda, I'd say, would be a briefing about the incoming storm, red warning everywhere. But Ambrose McDonagh has contacted, he's making a very important point, because he's worried about trees. And people will remember now, it's 12 years ago since we first heard of this phrase, ash dieback, which is a terrible danger to trees and kills trees. But Ambrose, you want to remind people that ash dieback is still here. It renders trees extraordinarily weak. And that means, especially trees that are in hedgerows, so to speak, because there's no grant for getting rid of the trees in hedgerows. There is if you run a small farm yourself or a small forest. Ambrose, go ahead. You're worried about the trees in the next 24 hours. You're worried about the danger they pose.
Well, hello, Joe, and thanks for being on. We're very scared over the storm that's coming, and particularly in relation to what happened on a farm and trees in general, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
Just to start with trees, I don't know if people are aware of the dangers of trees around their houses. This now would be in rural areas in Ireland. And particularly in this time with ash dieback, which is very common in ash trees.
Yeah.
And
what does it do? What does it do to ash? Does it weaken? I know you have to get rid of them if you're able to and you can pay for it. But say
the thing about it, Joe, is that people may visualize a tree and it's taken from the roots and it's knocked down by wind.
Mm-hmm.
But ash is a different animal altogether. It's a rotting of the tree about a meter up from the ground.
Okay.
From the inside out.
Wow.
And that's kind of why it's called ash dieback, because it prevents the sap and the growth from going up the tree to the top of the tree, and that's why it's called ash dieback. And it's not very visible to the naked eye either, because the only thing you would notice is the bark tends to get dried out,
mm-hmm.
and the growth wouldn't be as good either, or as fast in the springtime of the year. But it's a dangerous disease from that point of view, particularly if you have ash trees.
But are there still many trees around the country, and especially given what's going to happen? Hopefully not, but what's predicted in the next 24 hours, the strength of that wind. Are there many trees, those ash dieback trees, are there many of them still vulnerable around the country?
They are, Joe, and in the last storm, I've seen a couple of them, not with me now, but along the road where they have fallen, they crack off about a metre up, and you have no warning or anything, unless you're fairly sharp with trees, so that they're vulnerable. But people in general, Joe, in the country, have trees, high trees, which if they do come down in the wrong direction,
mm-hmm.
they're leaving their house, their garage, and whatever they have vulnerable to the fallen.
Yeah. And again, it's the unpredictability. It's coming around the corner. If you're in a car, if you're coming around a corner or a bus or whatever, and suddenly there's a tree in front of you, you don't have time. By the way, in Orson Uachtaráin at the minute, Michael D. Higgins Uachtaráin Héireann is signing the documentation that formally appoints Micheál Martin a Taoiseach. And behind him there is Sabina, and Sabina was warmly welcoming a few minutes ago Mary and indeed the children into three adult children into Orson Uachtaráin. But anyway, I'm just bringing people up to date and so we're just adding, I know there's been an awful lot of talk, rightly so, an awful lot of warnings, and the instruction is if there's a red warning, you are strongly encouraged not to leave your home or your place of safety, wherever you are at that particular time. You're at, when there is a red warning. The red warnings are clearly enunciated by the Met Office at the minute, and they obviously, even when the red warnings come in are, and expire, so to speak, it doesn't expire on the button. They don't do this according to clockwork. They expire over a period. But when the red warning is there, and obviously they've taken in, Met Office have allowed for some time to be extra careful. But there's more weather warnings are coming out by the minute, it seems, and there are specific times. I'll bring them to you after the break, but there are specific timings for specific areas about when the red warning is in place.
It's scary, Joe, from the point of view that they're talking about wind speeds of 180 kilometres an hour. And if you were to make an analogy of that, it's like driving along the motorway at 120 kilometres an hour and something passing you out.
Wow.
Like a slate or a roof tile or a bag or doing 40, 50, 60 kilometres faster than that.
Yeah. So Cork, let's go through it again. Yeah, let's go through. Carlow, Kilkenny, Wexford, Cork, Kerry, Limerick and Waterford from 2 a.m. to early tomorrow morning to 10 a.m. On Friday. So that's 8 hours. Stay indoors. That's the red. In Clare and Galway, it's from 3 a.m. till 11 a.m. You can see the tracking here tomorrow morning. Stay indoors. Leitrim, Mayo and Sligo from 4 a.m. tomorrow morning to midday, to noon tomorrow, Friday. Cavan, Monaghan, Dublin, Kildare, Laois, Longford, Louth, Meath, Offaly, Westmeath, Wicklow, Roscommon and Tipperary from 6 a.m. tomorrow morning till 11 a.m. for those 5 hours. 6 a.m. in the morning to 11 a.m. for those counties. And then Donegal, you can see where it's tracking, from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tomorrow afternoon. And after that it becomes state is yellow, but those things may change. We hopefully will talk to Alan O'Reilly of Carlow Weather before the end of the program to give us an update. Ambrose, by the way, am I not? I thought there were grants to help me get rid of ash dieback if this invasive disease that came from abroad. Are there no grants for getting rid of it if it's on the hedgerow that the council's not paid?
To the best of my knowledge, Joe, there isn't. Now, I know that IFA were looking for some kind of financial help to get rid of them, and I don't think that was forthcoming.
Okay.
Subject to correction there.
But people like Force, and you did as well. Well, maybe you probably heard it long before I did. But, like, it's 2012 when we first heard of ash dieback, this awful, awful of our disease that attacks our wonderful, wonderful trees. But anyway, another warning. Ambrose, stay safe. Stay safe, Ambrose. You're over at Ballinasloe at Gurramila Market. That's Ambrose McDonough.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715.
And now there's no need for people to go crazy. Now it's a serious warning, but it's a relatively short. Like in Dublin, it's from 6 a.m. tomorrow morning till 11. You're not going to starve. You won't run out of loo paper. You won't run out of Brennan's bread. Sheila McAdam. Sheila, where were you when you were nearly trampled on a few minutes ago?
Well, it was earlier this morning and I went to two major supermarkets.
Okay.
And first of all, I thought I had a day wrong. I thought it was Friday or Saturday. And one supermarket, the first one, was packed. But basically, Joe, you've said what I really wanted to say, that there is no panic. Because
tell me about the panic. I didn't see it, but you saw it.
Okay,
tell me about the panic you saw up in...
Okay, well, in the supermarket I was in, the first major supermarket I was in, the queues were, you know, the way at Christmas the queues are halfway down the aisle. The queues were way down the aisle. The express checkout, it zigzagged I don't know how far, okay. Zigzagged for half the supermarket. I went into it. Now, the shelves were full. There was no problem.
Okay.
My point is there were an awful lot of elderly people there buying big bottles of water. So what I want to say is, when the news is on and the Met Office is on, if they clarify what you've just said, that it's not going to last forever. These people, I felt so sorry for them, Joe. And the staff were even telling them that, you know, they were going to be open again the next day. So it's the second supermarket I went into then, one of the staff just kept out loud, she was saying, this is so stupid. She was saying in front of all the customers. But I don't know. I don't get it, Joe. But I understand the danger of it, obviously. And everybody should be home tomorrow, you know.
But don't panic. And instead of stocking up on Brenna's bread or whatever, just make sure, if you do have a back garden or indeed a front garden, just make sure your wheelie bins and everything
are
secure down. If you have a trampoline, will you turn it upside down immediately?
Exactly.
And throw some weights on it. In other words, to turn around the phrase that was once used about the Progressive Democrats by Brian Cowan, if in doubt, leave them out. No, if in doubt, bring it in. If in doubt, don't leave it out. Try and get it in.
It's just really to make it clear to, I mean, elderly people, Joe, that, you know, we're on walkers, et cetera, et cetera, trying to carry these big bottles of water, you know. They were panicking, obviously. I just felt sorry for them. And I did ask a few of them why they felt they had to panic. And one couple said, well, we don't know when we'll get out again.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
you know, so you will that's be. Basically You've, the point.
We'll meet again. A lot of people will be meeting again. Please God. And the main thing is to say,
please God,
But you'll be meeting again tomorrow afternoon.
Of course we will, yeah.
Hopefully. But anyway, stay in. That's the main thing. Please stay indoors.
Yeah.
Please stay indoors.
And listen, I just want to say rest in peace to Paddy Cole as well, because, oh my God, I really enjoyed that, the first part of the show.
He's a lovely
man. Brilliant. Yeah, it was
man,
fantastic. Yeah. But,
okay, well said, Sheila. Will you mind yourself?
Not
then?
At all. And you too, Joe.
Yes, that's Sheila. Right. We'll be here tomorrow, and Morning Ireland is on from 6 o'clock. Tomorrow morning, and I know Claire Bourne's team are going to be in before 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, because the 6 o'clock and our own team as well, and the 6 o'clock rule of no travelling in Dublin is from 6 till 11, so people have to get in before the 6 o'clock rule in the morning. Thanks indeed, Sheila McAdam. joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Alan O'Reilly, Carlo Weather. Alan, good afternoon again.
Good afternoon, Joe.
God, we're getting too much weather this year, aren't we? There's just too much weather.
Well, yeah, January's been a busy month, all right.
Okay, so compare and contrast this warning to your many years of experience doing these warnings. Compare and contrast.
This reminds me of the time I called you when Storm Darwin was hitting the southwest, Joe, and a lot of people weren't expecting that to be as bad in 2014. We're looking at a weather forecast and weather charts here that we've not seen since Darwin, and possibly worse than that in some areas. Now, not in the entire country, and it is going to be varying across it, but there is going to be gusts and winds that we haven't seen in Ireland and possibly since the 80s.
Wow. Okay, keep talking, Alan. In terms of obviously we hear force 12, but in terms of the power of these winds, is it something we've never seen?
Well, gusts, like, you're looking at hurricane force on the west coast, so you're looking at the equivalent of a category 1, and they're mean wind speed, to the 10-minute wind speed. But gusts of over 160, 170 kilometres an hour in Ireland are exceptionally rare. And the problem, Joe, is while the west coast would be used to seeing very strong gusts, these strong gusts are going to come further inland, so they're going to come right in to the Midlands and further into even the North Midlands in particular. I think the biggest problem, Joe, to be honest...
Well, when you say... Alan, help us here. I know you're great, but you are great. When you say Midlands, what counties are you... I know weather doesn't respect county boundaries, but
no,
just to give us a better feel for it. Midlands...
Roscommon, Westmead, Leitrim, Louth, Meath, you know, parts... counties in or around that, but obviously Galway, Mayo, Sligo, Clare, those areas are really going to be hit badly. But it's going to be bad right across the country. The biggest issue is probably going to be power, Joe. So, instead of people going and panic buying groceries that they're going to be able to buy on Saturday when the shops are open and there's no problems, it's really about charging up your batteries and planning for no power and making sure that elderly people have a way of getting heat into their house if they have no electricity, because I think the ESB crews are going to have a very busy week ahead, day or two, but a week ahead.
So people, obviously people with mobile phones, everyone has juicers, those little power packs they've forgotten about around the house, they got a year ago somewhere. Will you power them up this afternoon? If you have any other way of boiling a kettle or whatever, you might have, now be very careful, you might have a Primus stove or metal, whatever, from your camping days still out in the shed. Bring it in, dust it down, check it before anything happens, because you think the big thing, Alan, is going to be the loss of power.
I think so, because most people will heed the red warnings and will stay in during the worst of it. And then by tomorrow afternoon, things will be calm and the orange warning will end at 4 p.m. for the country. And by Saturday, we'll have a nice lull, good day to be able to clean up. But it's the loss of power and not having power, and it's going to be cold. It's going to feel cold, especially on Saturday. So, people need to be able to stay warm. And the other problem is we do have, not as bad now, but we have more stormy weather on Sunday and Monday, which could hinder the ESB crews, who are absolutely amazing, the work they do.
Yeah.
But they can only do it when it's safe. And unfortunately, the weather on Sunday and Monday could be challenging. So people maybe without broadband and internet these days can be as important as power for some people. So that could go on for days as well.
But I see Ryanair now, I know his priority is safety, but Michael is saying they'll be flying tomorrow. That's their plan. The planes won't be as badly affected by the wind or the storm as others. So, and Dublin, I presume, Dublin's from 6 to 11 tomorrow morning. So he's fairly confident he's going to run a normal schedule, but we have to wait and see, and people have to check as they go along. Okay, Alan, the times I read out there earlier, they still stand, do they? Dublin 6 to 11, and then there's a track, some areas starting at 2 o'clock in the morning, and the night, it's going to happen mainly in the night, and finishing around midday tomorrow, and then tracking up over Donegal at the lunchtime, and that'll be the end of it, hopefully. And above all, we don't want to hear any awful stories. Okay, Alan, good to meet him, all good. Great stalwart. Alan, right now, great expert above all else. Let's finish with the music of the great Paddy Cole. Dave Gibson was in sound, Audrey Donoghue's research, Tara Lockery Grant produced, and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end-of-season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers and more. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.